Let's see. Mike, can you hear us? Oop. He was up and dropped again. Folks, we're having a little bit of a technical difficulty to get us started. We're just trying to get our guest, Mike Blakely, to join us. Mike Beckley to join us. Please give us a second while we see if we can figure this out. He's here. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. We're just getting a little bit of a late start. We're trying to get one of our first-time guests to be able to join us in speaking. And he's here. Some reason he's having trouble getting up on the stage and staying there. Let's see. Mike, if you want to try dropping and joining through your mobile phone, that might be an option. Having trouble loading screen. Joanne, have you ever seen that before?
Yes, actually I have. If you're having trouble loading the screen, then you need to restart your device.
Restart the device.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, you're here. Oh, wait, he's here. Mike, the mute button is on the bottom right.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, thank you. Awesome. Well, is it Mike or Michael?
Either's fine. Either's fine. I don't stand on ceremony.
Okay.
Let's go with Mike for a podcast so we can save time.
Mike, I am glad you're here. We can get started now. Welcome, everyone. To this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. We are excited to have this week a session on why AI is boring in 2025 and how all of you can learn a little bit about how to accelerate your transformation programs. Today's session is brought to you by Appian, a software company that orchestrates business processes. And I want to thank Mike Beckley for joining us today and being our guest speaker. Welcome John, Joe, and Joanne to the floor. And Mike, we're going to give it a few more seconds just to get some more people to join. It's usually like 11:04 or 5 where I really get started with everybody. So everybody should be getting ready for their, in the U.S., getting ready for your Thanksgiving weekends. I'm really excited. I'll be doing some travel this week to go visit my son in Arizona. So if any of you are in Arizona and want to meet up with me, I'll be in Phoenix for a day and I will be in Tucson for a few days, and happy to say hello to anybody who is around. Again, today we're talking about why AI is boring in 2025 and how to accelerate transformation. Again, today's session is brought to you by Appian, a software company that orchestrates business processes. Mike, it's so good to have you on stage despite our few hiccups. I want to give you the floor first. Tell us why you think AI is going to be boring in 2025.
Yeah, thank you, Isaac. So glad to be here and to get past our firewalls finally. So what's boring about AI is that it's going mainstream, but it's how it's going mainstream that's uniquely boring. The most powerful and effective use cases for generative AI are simply not flashy and exciting the way they have been in the past year. Where generative AI, we've all gotten to see how amazing it is at drawing pictures, at painting, you know, at generating photos and images, and it's incredible at that. It's also incredible at you know, writing stories for us, and you know, anytime your nephew wants to hear a scary story, you can just go to generative AI and create one, and it's you know, amazing at those types of tasks. But where it has fallen down completely has been in real operational workflows. And now what's coming in 2025 is the where generative AI is going to be delivering the most value, where we're seeing it already, where it's been making incredible breakthroughs in business systems, is in the most boring part of them, and that's OCR. That is scanning documents, that's extracting data from PDFs, that is completely revolutionized the economics of scanning and digitizing paper. And it's the most incredible thing to see, you know, dramatic multi-million dollar savings. But, oh, my God, is it boring.
Mike, maybe go a little bit deeper into that. We've seen document processing before. It's been around for a long time, OCR, and then, you know, it can pick out, scan in my invoices and pick out dates and numbers out of it. It could scan my contracts and, again, pick out dates and numbers around it. What is generative AI doing above and beyond that?
Yeah, that's really the whole point is that, you know, OCR, we've taken it for granted because, well, it kind of works, but also that it kind of doesn't. And so to make a, you know, traditional AI using deep learning techniques made it a little better. But it still was a consulting engagement where humans had to train the AI on every document. They had to give enough samples. And if there was variability, even within that, the AI was a little better than the old template-driven models. But the fact is, it was still cost prohibitive to actually automate most of your documents because you could only focus that kind of attention and AI engineering on the most high volume, most repetitive documents. And so that left hundreds of document types out. So if you're an insurance company and you want to be able to quote fast because the faster quote gets the business most of the time, you're dealing with hundreds of possible agents out there all submitting their own unique formats. And, you know, with traditional AI models, you might get maybe 60% straight through processing. And now with generative AI, it's solving all of the edge cases. And I don't mean that, you know, without being specific. I mean all is all. So all the things that made AI fail before, tables that span multiple pages, tables without lines between the words and numbers, the documents got too large, whatever it is, handwriting, generative AI brings the context to the document that makes this really error-prone issue no more error-prone at all. It you know, your straight-through processing rates go up to like 97, 98, 99, 99.9%. It's insane. And it's insanely great in how different it is when you apply generative AI. And it just obsoleted the entire OCR industry virtually overnight.
And Mike, you mentioned insurance. You know, what other industries and types of companies should really be taking advantage of this?
Well, it's the most regulated, most paper-intensive industries because the regulations require you to submit so many forms. So banking, financial services of all kinds, investment banking, asset management, private equity, retail banking, these are, you know, massively paper-intensive transactions, insurance, of course, property and casualty, life, you know, all of it. And then the life sciences world, if you are trying to, you know, conduct clinical trials, and working with many different outsourced labs and facilities, the paperwork, the requirements, are massive, and you know, putting drugs through trials, it's just a very document heavy, compliance heavy sort of process because human lives are at stake, and the documentation is never going away. But now with generative AI, we can actually capture that whole long tail of unstructured data and structure it. And then the government, this is really going to be hugely transformative in government. You want to make a dent in how much manual labor still is required for the government bureaucracies to operate. Generative AI attacking the paper problem in a new way is going to be really, really impactful. But also, I can't emphasize enough, it's the paperwork that matters. It's not talking about generative AI replacing the human agent. It's not generative AI, you know, that's going to somehow make the decisions. It's generative AI that in 2025 is going to actually be able to finally fulfill the dream of the paperless office. And that's going to transform government. It's going to transform banking. It's going to transform insurance and life sciences to start. But wherever the regulations are heaviest, that's where the paper's the heaviest. That's where the impact is exponentially greater.
I want to go around the horn. Joe, you're giving us a thumbs up to the paperless office. I'm sure you have a lot of examples of that.
I saw this week, Isaac, an example of where exactly what Michael is talking about has come to fruition. It was a startup company showing an RPA solution. And we know RPA is good as long as nothing changes, right? So sort of version 1.0 of RPA was very, very rigid. Well, when you bake in an AI underpinning and the RPA instructions can be delivered in context, suddenly you've supercharged your RPA agent. And even when the forms change a little bit, or there's a new column or, you know, something else that would ordinarily derail the RPA script, it can be more adaptive and maybe get, you know, 98 or 99% accuracy as opposed to 60 to 70%.
Yeah, I like the term Mike uses around exceptions because, you know, and that's why I threw out the invoice processing example. RPA has the same issue, which is you sort of design the flow to the ideal path and, you know, cheer success. And then all of a sudden you start putting in real world examples and it just doesn't work. And I agree with Mike, you know, the ability for it to not only just handle the parsing issues, but handle a lot of the interpretation issues that come up when you start using long form content. It is pretty amazing. Joanne, what are you seeing that's boring that we can really deliver value out in 2025 around AI?
Well, to the point about RPA, Gen AI is not the only way to do this, but agentic AI will blow the RPA out of the water because it does both. It does we designed the flow to take the standard and, to Michael's point, all of the exceptions. And you can actually, because agents are multi-layers and they sense and detect their environment before they do anything else, they can immediately discern whether it's the exception or the norm to speed up the process. And you can actually let them go off and do their thing in an even faster way than Gen AI can do it, because it's pre-programmed to not only sense and detect the anomalies and the environment, but just the way the frameworks for agentic AI are being created. That is, I wouldn't say RPA on steroids. I would say more like this is a new class of technology that has the capability, particularly to the point about paper-intensive industries and sectors. Think about a hospital and the amount of paperwork that you have to sign, even if it's on a tablet. Now you can contextualize the same piece of data in different flavors. So your chocolate, vanilla, strawberry around the same is the different contexts that can be applied. In agentic AI, this becomes that much faster. So as quickly as something like Claude or ChatGPT can do the tasks in the RPA, the agents can do them even 30 times faster with less power, less compute, et cetera, because it's a framework that tells them what to do and go off and execute without a human necessarily having to be involved. Do you trust it? You won't right off the bat, but after 10,000 revs, absolutely you will.
Thank you, Joanne. So Joe brought up RPA. You bring up agentic AI. Let's let John, how do we take boring use cases and make them value in 2025? And then Mike, I'll come right back to you.
Yeah, and thanks, Isaac. Thanks for having me up here. I completely agree with Mike that generative AI has been so powerful for translation, for information retrieval. I think the things that are holding it back right now and making it boring are two things. Are one is that we're using general purpose AI often for very specific use cases, and well, that can be helped by augmenting it with information. I think as we get towards more custom built language models and generative AI that are, you know, built just specifically for the use cases we're in, I think it's going to get a lot more interesting. The other one is that I think a lot of the people using generative AI right now are interfacing it through through a website. They're pasting stuff in and they're getting things back, or they're using Microsoft Copilot or one of the other ones where it's like the humans are the interface to it. And I think once you start stitching generative AI into line of business applications, and that's when the magic happens. And so, like, I know, Mike, you're at Appian. Like, just the ability to have users build stuff with low code or build stuff with, you know, have the development team build stuff with, you know, regular development tools and start stitching generative AI into really into the workflows. That's when it gets really, really neat. You start saving time.
Yeah, Mike, they're throwing you the softballs because I was at your conference earlier this year and I saw some great examples of that convergence between, you know, what you can used to be able to do with RPA and maybe it fell off, and you get into intelligent automation, you get into low code capabilities, plugging it into machine learning capabilities, and now Joanne is introducing agents, which you introduced back in June. Tell me about this convergence, right? This convergence of all these capabilities. What are you seeing businesses being able to benefit from all these capabilities when they're brought under together in a platform like Appian?
Well, the important thing is with a new technology like generative AI, can you actually use it in these highly regulated industries? And can you answer that question for a regulator? Can you answer it for your customer that you're keeping their data secret and private and you're not training an LLM on their private information and therefore risking leaking it and sharing it in some unanticipated way because the LLM is out of your control? You can only predict what it will do. You can't necessarily, you know, stop it from doing something unexpected. And so what Appian has done for the last year, and I think, you know, some of our competitors as well, is really focused on this concept of private AI and making sure that generative AI can be installed directly into a process or a workflow and kept walled off from, you know, being you don't have to train it on your data. You're keeping everything within your security perimeter. The data stays under your control, and yet you're getting the power and benefits of generative AI and agentic AI, and, you know, to make your RPA, to make your processes, to make your low-code applications, to make them, you know, actually intelligent. And so that's the most, again, the most boring part of this is now we have, you know, the security guarantees that in government we call it the FedRAMP guidelines we've got to comply with. So we have FedRAMP approved generative AI in banking, you know, PCI compliance, and in healthcare, HIPAA compliance. So we have these compliance regimes that we've been able to get approval for generative AI in, and a deployment mechanism through our partnership with AWS Bedrock to actually deliver generative AI and agentic AI directly into all these workflows that have previously thousands and thousands of people inside of banks are still doing manual work just because there wasn't legal or compliance approval to use generative AI. And that's all those barriers are falling down in 2025.
So I've got private LLMs. I've got compliance for the major industries. Can you comment on what agentic AI is going to do for these industries?
Yeah, so agentic AI is the new, you know, trendy term, and it's being used in wildly different ways. You know, what Joanne was talking about, you know, is interesting and in some ways different from what I see, and that's that most of what's going on with agentic is the AI companies are trying to chain together, you know, multiple actions within the AI. So having you know, Anthropic demonstrated Claude itself as an RPA bot, if you will, going and driving a web browser. So I mean, when people say agentic AI, they usually mean generative AI driving a web browser, as opposed to a script in a bot driving a web browser. And that is very primitive and slow right now, and it will get a lot better. I don't know how fast it will evolve in 2025. But instead, the effective agentic AI right now is using a workflow engine like an Appian to provide a tool chain to the generative AI, and therefore having the chain of reasoning governed by the process that the humans have built or designed. And then the AI can be so much more powerful because it can perform whole activities like an underwriting action within the constraints and the common sense guardrails and the goals that have been set by humans and within the compliance boundaries of the process. But it is not just, you know, a chat and a discussion where I ask a question, I get an answer. It's do something for me. And it goes through multi-steps. It invokes many different data systems and comes back with an answer for me.
Mike, you're being consistent with your boring use case, because basically my version of an agentic AI is bring the generative AI capability to the workflow people are doing in the platforms that people are doing them with the data in that platform, but also the data outside of that platform that we make accessible and bring that human in the loop to make them more productive, more smarter, bring capabilities to them that they didn't see before because it's buried behind a lot of data. Go ahead, Joanne. I know you have some thoughts around this as well.
Yeah, to both of the points that were made, the beauty of agentic AI is that it actually can do not only the process calls, but the actual programmatic functions, features. You can build it. There's a variety of different kinds of frameworks. So think about taking something like a microservice or a container and saying to using an agentic framework, and as I said, there are plenty of them, where you can actually tell the agent, go look at all my back office systems that would normally be used in this workflow, an ERP or PLM or a CRM package, whatever it is, and now also fetch data or go and query against a different kind of database, call it a time series, and put all of these pieces of data together in a context that makes it very usable for the user. So you're getting the right answer in the right context on demand, and you're getting the opportunity to either add to it, which means it could be used for a training purpose, or it could be used for knowledge capture. And over time, as it learns all of the pieces of information, it then becomes sophisticated enough that you could say, okay, now do this for me, go and execute, and do it with the assurity that all of the data from all the different systems, when they're choreographed together in the right way, are going to give you the right result. And it's not about using things like RAG around the Gen AI to make it more less hallucinatory. It's about actually go and do this for me. So all of the mundane tasks that don't require a tremendous amount of strategic or real thinking around problem solving can be done by agents, and you can actually have one agent collaborate with another. So if you do have complex problems like we do in manufacturing, I can put my agents together to get an answer like, here's the root cause, and do it in an incredibly fast way. So depending on the role I have as a in my workforce, if it's in the financial services business, if I'm a mortgage approver, for example, as opposed to someone doing another part of the process, like validating and verifying, I can have agents do the validation and verification against another piece of paper called my T4 or my income tax return to make sure that I'm qualified. I can do the same thing in manufacturing with a bill of materials. Both those workflows and both those processes could be done automatically or autonomously by the agents. So what it's doing is it's freeing up workforce time to work on the more complex issues that really drive business value. And that's what fascinates me about it. And to see these kind of capabilities embedded in pieces of software that will then be sort of smart out of the box, that's going to change the face of business, not just the face of technology.
Love this discussion around how boring AI is going to change the face of business. And, you know, Joanne, you're bringing up another key point around where agents are going to be very interesting. What you're describing is role-based agents and looking at a workflow and saying, you know, I'm a security expert, I'm a privacy expert, or I'm not. And, you know, how can I get some help around what to do here, given the circumstance or where we are in our flow? Mike, I'm wondering if you can comment on that role-based agentic AI. And then also, you know, again, coming back from being at the Appian conference back in June, I think it was, I lose track of time. You know, what intrigues me about your offering is the intersection of these capabilities with your data fabric. So maybe talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, well, let me just say this. What I love about what Joanne's talking about is how important the workflow is. And it's becoming more important than the generative AI models and the LLMs, the underlying large language models themselves, because what's happening is that the models are becoming commoditized. They've all become so good that even the open source alternatives are catching up. And you know, we saw China released a model, an LLM model, which may or may not be nearly as good as the American versions in this past week. This is the kind of, you know, rapid convergence on LLMs that is devaluing the innovation in the LLM and instead shifting where the value will lie to the application layer, to the workflows themselves, and therefore to get value, you know, to create these different role-based agents you're talking about. It's all about, do you have the right workflow? Do you have the right tools that the LLM can act on? And then what you just asked about data fabric, this is our approach, and this is, I mean, Appian is not the only one with a data fabric. Now, they're becoming, data fabrics are becoming quite trendy and popular. Most of our low-code process automation competitors have recently announced new data fabric technology, just because we were one of the early adopters. It's really become common to see, because what's a data fabric? A data fabric is a way to work with all these different microservices, all this different remote data in systems that you don't control, because today's business is done through an ecosystem of suppliers, and it's more distributed than ever. You don't do your own payroll, you outsource that. You don't do your own all kinds of things in a financial services transaction. The clearing is done by a clearing broker. There's there's all kinds of different interactions in throughout the economy. And so to bring all that data together so that the AI and the agentic AI knows what it's working on, data fabric technology is how we make that simple. And so combining data fabric with the Appian process engine, the workflows, and then having an interface to that, to the humans, because you still want humans in control, humans setting the goals, humans supervising and orchestrating. That's how it all comes together with the data fabric, making sure that you have the right data.
John, I want to go to you for a second before I go to the break. You've got all these capabilities that are coming to fruition. What are some of the use cases that you think about?
Well, I did an activity-based costing exercise for one of the insurance companies, and we're looking at the agents, and it was a workforce of a couple thousand people. And we looked at how they spend their time, and we divided it into like adds value, doesn't add value, you know, and there was we looked at the stuff that, like, obviously the things that don't add value, you want to get rid of them. The things that add value, we looked at, like, is it automated or is it not automated, and like how much you could do for the time savings. And I just, like, when I see the capabilities come out to stitch generative AI into business applications and workflows, and then I look at how much time people are doing really manual things, it's like the opportunity's out there. And that's like what really, really excites me. It's just like having, like, being able to go back and like find something that like 1,000 people do on a daily basis. And like, how do we not do that task? Because not because it's not required, it's an absolutely required step, but how can we automate that thing and make it go a whole lot faster?
Thanks, John. Thanks, everybody, for joining this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers, episode 104. Today, we're talking about accelerating transformation, why AI is boring in 2025, talking about the intersection of document processing, RPA, intelligent automation, low-code, machine learning, and now generative AI, and now bringing agentic AI to your organization. Folks, everybody, this week's episode is brought to you by Appian. Processes define your business. Make them better with Appian, the leading platform for process orchestration, automation, and intelligence. The Appian platform empowers leaders to design, automate, and optimize important processes from start to finish. With our industry-leading platform and commitment to customer success, Appian is trusted by top organizations to drive transformational process change for over 25 years. Amazing. Mike, I love that picture of all of the founders at the conference up on stage, all working together for 25 years around this mission that you're describing is boring. I want to start my next question with Joe, and then we'll get back to you, Mike, after this. Joe, you know, we're creating a paradox here, right? We're saying AI is boring, but for the last year and a half, it's the excitement that boards and CEOs and quite frankly, a lot of technology companies and even those of us in media have been shining a light on all these exciting, sexy, amazing areas, whether it's autonomous vehicles, whether it's robotics, whether it's, you know, AI, you know, breaching into generative AI. That's what's getting everybody excited and a little bit fear of falling behind. And we're coming here today and saying AI is boring in 2025. Take these amazing capabilities and plug it into the most pragmatic areas of your business to drive value and lean on the intersection of all these different capabilities that have been around for a while. Lean on them because generative AI is adding an extra flavor of capability to be able to bring workflow to an amazing set of productivity, connect people, connect data. Joe, how do we excite leadership around the business opportunities when we're, you know, we're saying these are boring areas for the business to invest in?
I think there are a couple of things, Isaac, that come to mind. We've held out the promise of the quote unquote single pane of glass for management to be able to know what's going on in their organization, you know, sort of across the board. And despite lots of efforts of BI tools and integration tools, without the ability to orchestrate the flow of information among disparate systems, rationalize, align, and truly present that information in a cohesive way, which I think AI is going to have the capability to really do. We haven't been able to deliver on that promise. And so it's boring in the sense that we're talking about the same old thing, really understanding what's happening in your business. But I believe for the first time with tools like Appian and other workflow and orchestration kinds of tools, we can really do it. We can go to all these different systems and understand the data and build that true perspective of what's going on and even aid in the decision making about who, what, when, and where to move the parts around.
So Joe, you're gonna have to go deeper for me here, right? We've been selling this for a while. The CEO wants to be wowed, the board wants to be wowed, and we're gonna come back to them with, you know, a use case and a set of use cases that that, you know, on the surface seems boring, but have a tremendous opportunity. How do you sell that in? How does a digital trailblazer sell that in as a priority going into 2025?
I think you highlight the pitfalls that the previous attempts have fallen into. You know, what have been the wrinkles, misalignment of data, the lack of a true understanding of implications of certain decisions. You know, AI has the ability, like people, to look at the numbers and say, well, wait a minute, there's something a little askew here. Let's you know, figure this out. It can integrate more. It can integrate faster. It can have many, many more rules to follow. So there, I think you can paint a much broader picture of what you're able to present and the quality of what you'll be able to present to management. I truly believe in it.
Mike, let's help our audience here, right? We're really excited by this idea of document processing. I think that's probably the area that every major company has struggled with over the last 10 years. And now we're bringing all this Gen AI capability to it. We're bringing low-code capability to it. But, you know, how do we sell this in so that the executive committee and the board see the value out of it and get over this, I need to put my eggs into the hype basket?
Well, I think this is really easy. It's budget times. And when you look at your traditional OCR and it's costing you $14 million a year and it's got straight through processing rates that are still only in the high 60 percentage points, maybe 70 if you're lucky, and you're able to say, well, now generative AI, directly like Joe was saying, addresses the edge cases. It addresses the exceptions that we've been talking about. And that means that we can dramatically cut our spend up front on the software It's going to be less expensive to use generative AI to process that paper. And because there's going to be far fewer errors, we're going to get higher straight through processing. That's a lot less manual labor. That's more indirect savings that will translate into millions more. And so that's the simple part. But what Joe was talking about was reporting. Right behind handling all that paper is the creation of new paper. The single pane of glass is really another way of saying people need to create dashboards and reports and spend, the white collar workers spend a whole lot of their time, maybe 20-30% minimum on generating reports for their bosses. And generative AI is helping solve that problem, providing ways to automate those data reporting pipelines and gather information more efficiently through data fabrics. And attaching a data fabric to a generative AI engine in a secure way allows us to not have to know where the information lives. The generative AI can go find it for us and show us its chain of reasoning and how it got to create the queries, and then automating that pipeline so that we don't have to go create a manual report every time we're asked for one by the executives on how that new product is doing and how's that product launch going and how's the adoption going. Like, all of that can be generated for us and let people go back to thinking and reasoning over what to do about the results rather than trying to find out what the truth is.
Yeah, Michael, I think that's a good way of showcasing that the intention was always there. It was actually a lot harder for us to implement a lot of the things we were discussing. And then we got to the point where we had all the data integrated, we had all the capability there, and we fell short because of all the exceptions that you were highlighting at the beginning. There's a lot of messiness in human decisions when it comes to complex processes, and that's what we're trying to bring to the table today. Go ahead, Joanne. You wanted to jump in on this.
Yeah, I did. Because in addition to cost savings and value creation, on the value creation side, whether it's agentic or just generative, and you can't necessarily use generative AI for everything. It's not a one size fits all. But in the cases where you are using it as part of an agentic capability, you have something different than the single pane of glass. You have the opportunity to create context around each of the panes in the single pane and go deeper, go broader, go wider. That gives you a different kind of perspective. And that perspective is really what seems to be resonating with the C-suite around it. Because if they're purposeful about what they want to accomplish using the shiny new tool, and it's presented to them as an opportunity to broaden the way they make decisions or incorporate other factors into those decisions, then they're out of the silo of the process of decision-making. They now can think bigger. And by thinking bigger, they get to more cost-effective, value-creating decisions. So revenue growth, innovation, resiliency, all those top-line things now become doable. We're not just looking at process optimization for cost savings. We're leveraging the same data to be able to do those top-line values just as much.
Excellent, Joanne. John, top-line values, what do you want to bridge off of that on?
I was going off mute just to respond back to the other one about the democratization of data, if I can make a comment on that one really quickly.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I think over the last, I would say 10 years, like, the people have been a lot more willing to consolidate all the data, stick data in data lakes, and the generative AI has been such an amazing informational retrieval tool. But we've also had people using, like, I would say Power BI and things like that. Like, it's been so nice to be able to actually, like, create the dashboards you want. But there's a whole lot of people that can't create the dashboards because they don't have the skills for it, or they get a dashboard and it doesn't quite have what they want. Generative AI's ability to write code or change things, I think, is also going to just help really expose a lot of the information that people want to see on the dashboards. Because I think if somebody's able to get the data into consolidated into a data lake, and somebody's able to get a report and it doesn't have quite what they want, it's going to be, so much easier to say, you know, have generative AI tailor the report to what you need to get exactly the data you want, or create a new report for things, or the query that you need for the data. And so that's, I think from surfacing data for executives for reports to get the information people need to make decisions. I see a lot of really good stuff in that space coming.
Yeah, and I think, John, to your point, I mean, the fact that so many people on our staff and the employee base have jumped on being able to test and evaluate and use LLMs, that will be a bridging point for them to work with these other capabilities, and maybe just lower the change management barrier that we've seen when we brought new capabilities into our platforms. Liz, welcome to the floor. How do we make a boring use case sound exciting? Liz?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Excellent. Yeah, so first of all, I don't think there's anything boring about making money. So let's just take that right off the table. The idea about these boring use cases allows us to take something that we know is a huge cost of doing business, either operationally or potentially cost of goods sold, just in terms of the labor intensity, and reduce that down so that we can then invest in things that make a much higher value add to the company strategy. Now, the hard part is actually doing the business case around that. Everybody likes to say how, oh, this is going to be so great. We're going to set up this internal LLM. It's going to be a private LLM, and we're going to do all this great AI stuff and blah, blah, blah. That's really expensive. I'm sorry, it's really expensive. And so you actually have to do the hard work of doing the business case, building out that those AI tools, those agents, whatever it is that you're going to do, actually has to be offset with the value that you're going to get so that you can, and maybe it's an ROI over multiple years, or maybe it's within a year, I don't know, but, putting pen to paper and demonstrating the value add in terms of dollars and when those dollars can be then redirected to something that's more strategic for the company, that's how you get your C-suite engaged.
Start with the money, which is usually a place that we're all fearful of, and yet we have some pretty good, interesting use cases. You know, Mike, you brought up document processing earlier, and Joanne brought, how do we show growth and potentially long-term value out of this? What I love about document processing is being able to bring my corpus of documents, my 2, 3, 4 years worth of documents back into an environment that's intelligent. And then starting being able to ask questions around it and saying, how do we get smarter as a business around this? Joe and I have seen this, in the construction industry. How do we bring, all of our bid documents and all of our planning documents into a single environment and say, and ask a very simple question. What projects are we more profitable on? Which ones should we bid more aggressively on? And which ones do we have to get more efficient in our operations around before we start bidding around? So I really like this idea of, now I have a way of bringing all this intelligence from 3, 4, 5, 7 years of documentation that we have and using that to some kind of competitive advantage. Joanne brought up healthcare. That could be a really exciting place for building efficiencies and also developing smarter and more personalized healthcare by looking through all that documentation that we have there. Michael,
and that could be part of the business case, right? That actually you estimate a percentage of your business that you can actually create some efficiencies on, and you include that in the business case.
Absolutely. Michael, tell us some more of these exciting use cases that come from the boring side of Gen AI.
Yeah, so I'd say the most boring one is you mentioned earlier about the software development lifecycle. People have this dream and this vision that generative AI will suddenly replace all software development and, on its way to achieving the singularity and replacing all humans, the first thing it's going to do is write all the code for us. And so we don't need to worry about anything. I don't mean to be negative, but that doesn't matter. It's not going to happen in 2025. Don't put it in your forecast or your savings plan unless you really want to look silly. What is happening, though, is the most text-heavy part of the software development lifecycle is requirements. And so we can automate the heck out of requirements. And that's where it works today. You know, we can ingest all those requirements documents for the most complex applications and create very detailed plans for how to maximize the reuse of existing components and systems and data integrations and minimize the redundancy and the cost and the risk of building and modernizing your ERP systems. So this is what, you know, everyone is doing. Everyone's trying to modernize their systems so that they can take advantage of AI, but AI itself, where it's doing it, is not automatically replacing all the software developers. It is automating the most text-heavy part of the SDLC, and that is upfront requirements management and planning for these application builds. And then, so that's another great boring use case for you. But I do want to emphasize, when I talk about pushing paper and OCR in these business cases, I'm saying it for really specific reasons. I don't think you need to get esoteric with the future value when you're talking to executives, because they get jaded quickly. They've been promised and overpromised what new technology is going to deliver in cost savings. But when you are very specific on OCR, you can prove it in days and weeks. And that is what people need. They need to see proof and real value from generative AI applications. And that is one where we can sit down and right away feed in the documents like you were talking about, Isaac, construction documents, planning documents, whatever they are, underwriting documents, and show executives absolute, you know, knock down amazing results, you know, virtually overnight. And so that's what's going to get funded. That's what's going to be effective. And yes, of course, that will have greater value in terms of better customer experience. They're getting their insurance quote, you know, in seconds and not in weeks. They're, better employee engagement because they don't have to sit around doing all this manual rekeying and swivel chair between systems. But don't promise that. Just promise what you can show and demonstrate, which is you can scan a whole lot of different paper than you ever could, you know, at much higher quality than you ever could before. And that lays the foundation for transforming all of these human workflows. And so, no, it's not as sexy or as exciting as the singularity. It's not as cool as worrying about whether or not generative AI is going to cause nuclear war. But wow, will it be a massive improvement in your bottom line.
Mike, you're highlighting a piece that I think is incredibly valuable for anybody who's worked in the low-code and no-code space, the ability to take a concept and show results pretty quickly, that we're heading down the right track, that we're demonstrating value around it. I mean, I think going back to the question I put Joe on the spot, you know, how do you get the board excited over this? Tell me if I'm sitting on top of all this information, if I'm in, you know, all the underwriting data that we have access to, all the tax documentation that the government has, what can we do with it quickly and start showing and getting people excited about this use case of looking through this documentation? What can I do in a short amount of time?
Well, whatever you're doing with it today. What you're doing with today is leaving most of it behind, but you're automating some of it with maybe 70% straight through processing at best. And so to be able to take that data and now feed it through a generative AI and agentic AI powered pipeline into your workflows that you already have, don't invent a new workflow. That takes too much time. Use your existing workflow and pilot using new generative AI techniques. And you can, overnight, improve your straight-through processing 20-30%. You can actually get much better accuracy on more fields, on more data types, on more document types, and show those results right away. That's what you do. You don't invent the future. Just reinvent what you have right in front of you with this new technology.
You know, Sajit has been trying to raise his hand. He asked me a question over a message. You know, we start bringing all these capability in and we start exposing it to our employees. How can we then get creativity using AI now that we have access to all this information? Mike, I don't know if you want to take that or if somebody else wants to take that. But I think it's an interesting question, right? We keep bringing more intelligence and more capability. And now we're doing it inside people's workflows. And we're saying, hey, we're taking away the difficult work that you were doing before, and we're bringing more creativity to capabilities to you. Joe, what are some of the creativity that we could bring to them? Thank you, Joe.
Look, nobody likes to open a spreadsheet, copy a couple of columns, open another spreadsheet and paste them, then go to the ERP, run report 7-A, copy a few numbers off there. But this work is mind-blowingly boring, right? And if we can introduce tools, low-code tools like Appian or other tools, that we can teach our employees how to do their functions, just what they're doing today, just do it faster, smarter, and with a higher degree of quality, and free up their time, they're going to embrace that. You know, I've long been an advocate. You see me post all the time about how corporate America needs to invest in its existing employees. And this is one of the best ways that you can take your current work staff and elevate them and give them the ability to do the mundane work, hand that off to an agent, teach them how to hand that stuff off to an agent, and let them add more value in ways that AI isn't capable of yet.
Go ahead, John.
I was at Accenture for 10 years, and I remember being a new analyst, and Joe's just giving me nightmares from all the money work I used to do back in the days. So that totally resonates with me. The other thing I was going to say is that I have seen that the jury's kind of out on how much generative AI helps on development productivity. Somebody knows the CTO of a pretty large company, they went all in on it. Like talking with them a year later on how much efficiency gains did you get, and it was I think you guys study that more. I do know that anything that you code that you do get from generative AI, the amount of testing that you have to do on it goes massively up. And so that's an area I think that it's almost, you almost have to look at how much you have to increase in testing for whenever you bring in this third party technology or third party stuff. And with generative AI, it can give you different results at different times because of its indeterminate nature of it. So. But yeah, Joe, I remember doing so much busybody work when I was just starting off in my career. It was like hours of it, days of it.
Look, I subscribe, and we'll go to Joanne. Joanne, you know, you remember the days when mobile first came out and cloud first came out, and we kind of went after the low-hanging fruit, right? What does it help us optimize that we haven't done before? But the real exciting part of mobile was when we built mobile-first interfaces and extended what people were doing from things they were doing in the office to things they were doing out of the office. That became a whole new set of capabilities. Same thing with cloud. What it enabled us to do is scale things that we couldn't do before and get access to capabilities that we couldn't do before. I think when you start putting together RPA, intelligent automation, low-code, you put all this together, document processing, and you start bringing into the workflow of people and say, start using this and start thinking differently about what you're doing. You know, get off of trying to do copy-paste spreadsheets and start asking this thing questions. We don't know exactly what people are going to start using this for. We want them to work with us and partner with us to figure that out. Go ahead, Joanne.
Well, we definitely want them to work with us and partner with us, but we're freeing up the workforce to be innovative, to experiment, to have the time to think that they didn't have before. But really, if you look at it from a data fabric perspective or a data perspective, there are common data elements across different workflows or different process streams. And this is where agentic AI really comes in, because once you have those common denominators and you start adding different contexts, I like to think of it like a diamond, right? When you look at the diamond and you look at the light hitting the stone in one way and then turn the stone a different way, you get a completely different perspective, and it makes you think about things in a way that starts adding value. I mean, the creativity that one can use with generative AI is one thing. When you start combining the MLs, the machine learning, and specialized process controls, if you're in manufacturing or you're making things, and all the different kinds of other kinds of AI, that's when the world changes, because the mundane task that you started with ends up being, wow, I just took all that paperwork, got rid of it out of my, sort of day, It's all done. Now I can think about how can I make a better product? How can I take people's feedback on a product, whether it's an insurance policy or a cup, and say, how do I make this better, faster, cheaper, more enticing to my customer, more enticing to my customer's customer? That's where we're giving knowledge workers actually the ability to become knowledgeable, because we bring in all the different streams of data in new ways. It's kind of like, you know, Lego, right? If you only work with white blocks, all you got is something with white blocks. If you start mixing and matching those and make them light, microservice light, or containerized light, you can build whatever you want. And that is, I think, the greatest value of this inflection point as AI is getting more sophisticated. We have the ability to create.
Mike, that's a tee up for you. What are we creating? You were going to chime in on this.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say was, how do you spark that and scale it, that creativity? And the way we're doing that with our clients today is we're able to run hackathons where business leaders, business users, 50, 60 of them at a time, who have not previously built Appian applications, they're not experienced low-code developers, we give them a two-hour enablement session, and then they game out what workflows that they already deal with they want to automate. And using, you know, low-code generative AI and agent-building techniques on the existing workflow, in a single day, they can innovate and create. But what comes out of that is on a platform which is already designed to scale and be governed by IT and is already regulatory approved and compliant, so that they can not just have creativity, but that creativity can then actually be put into the most, you know, direct way into operations and workflows and scaled out across an enterprise. And that's the real magic of you know, what we're talking about here by saying, look at the workflows you have, use these low-code generative AI and agentic technologies in combination with your existing workflows. And that's where people can all be a part of the process of change. People can all be involved in the process of operationalizing how AI is going to actually transform the most boring parts of their work.
Mike, both John and I had the same question. What types of applications are coming out of the hackathons that your business users are able to, you know, spark up that quickly?
Yeah, so it's operations. It is the middle office and back office operations of how do you actually perform a treasury financing operation? How do you move money from one account to another? How do you actually onboard a customer more efficiently when you have to reconcile many different systems to accomplish that today? How do you move from just onboarding a customer to then updating the regulatory reporting for that customer? It is in the operations groups where you have the most pent up demand to try and tackle those customer and retail operations. I think that you'll see immediate benefit from holding those types of hackathons, as long as it's not just about the AI, it's about how do you look at it through a workflow perspective.
Mike, I'm going to let you end with that statement because I think that's incredible advice to all the digital trailblazers listening here in terms of bring boring use cases, bring the capability to your operations teams. They know what the steps in their process are. They know where they're struggling with too much work in the boring areas, and you know, give them the ability to do a hackathon, bring the capability to them where they can experiment with these technologies. The fascinating thing about this now is we have data fabrics to bring data in. We have low-code capabilities to enable building out the workflows. We have document processing to load in all this documentation. We have all these different capabilities, and the reality is let's bring it to a workflow. Let's set up our agents where people are actually working, and let's let them feel empowered. Mike, any last words for the group today before we close out?
I think you closed out well. Thank you, Isaac, and thank you to the panelists. I think this has been a great conversation. I know we're going to have an incredibly boring 2025 with a ton of real, actual, practical value from generative AI.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Joanne, Joe, Liz, John, for joining me today in this discussion on how AI will be boring in 2025. I want to thank our sponsor today, Appian. Business and organizations run on processes. Make your process better with Appian, the process company. Visit appian.com to learn more. Thanks again, Mike, and to the Appian team for sponsoring today. I just want to let you know about our upcoming episodes. Next week, holiday week, we're going to skip November 29th. Here are your three episodes for December. I just announced this yesterday. December 6th, we'll be doing culture transformation, evolving diversity, inclusion, hybrid working, and global collaboration. A lot of changes I expect happening in companies over the next few years. So we'll be talking about that on December 6th. On December 13th, AI era transformation, Gen AI guardrails, and how to implement safe Gen AI. And then on the 20th, shaping tomorrow, moral courage on taking the right path and doing the right thing. All three of those were recommended by listeners. So if you're listening here and would like to share an idea for a topic, do message me. Again, thank you, Mike, and thank you, Appian. Thank you, Joanne, Joe, Liz, and John for joining me today. Happy Thanksgiving to all of us who are celebrating here in the United States, and everybody have a safe and happy weekend. Have a good one.